Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 20, Episode 16. This is Writing Excuses.
Second person.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Dong Lan.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Howard.
I thought about trying to do those intros in second person, but it would have been really hard.
It would be very
The best I could come up with was, and you're not Howard, I am, yeah. But that's still first person.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I guess I could say, you're Aaron.
Yeah, that chaos would reign. And I think that, like, second person is, sometimes feels like the chaotic, proximity. So we're talking about perspective, we're talking about proximity, and now we're getting into second person, which is when you use you. That is sort of the kind of very baseline level. And I think there are a few different varieties of second person that I like to think of. The most sort of, purest second person is when the you are addressing is the reader. But you can also use second person to address another character in a story. And I often think that letter writing, epistolary, is like you, because when you write a letter, you go like, you know, I'm writing to you, Sir Mix-a-Lot is the thing.
That's usually who I write letters to.
Yes. Baby got her letter back.
My brain is doing things. But so what do you think? I feel like people have very strong opinions about both Sir Mix-a-Lot and second person.
Let me say this about second person.
Yes.
It is easy to forget that you, and this is me speaking to you, fair listener, have probably used second person quite a bit on social media or conversationally. So imagine this, you're driving and all of a sudden, and you know, you tell a story that way sometimes, not all the time, but you slip into second person very naturally because it is a way to draw the reader into, mm-hmm. or draw the listener, draw your conversational group into the experience that you personally had in a way that, you know, no kidding. So there I was, doesn't.
We think of first person as the most intimate voice, right? We think of first person as the one where you're right next to the interiority of the character. But there's a weird way in which I think second person is actually the most intimate in a way that can make people really uncomfortable because you're sort of forcing the reader's subjectivity into the fiction itself. You're integrating the person who's reading the story into the experience of being in the story in a way that can be a little disorienting or really fun for the reader, right? Like, you know, we've been talking about second person epistolary. Part of why I think This Is How You Lose the Time War hits so hard is that the romance is built over a series of second person direct address letters, right? And so the reader is the one who's sort of feeling romanced by these characters talking to each other, even though we know Red and Blue are talking to each other, but that's all being passed through the reader's experience.
And I think there's a distinction between second person where you're addressing another character and the reader can participate and choose to be part of that character. And second person where you're addressing the reader. And there, I think sometimes where you are attempting to make the reader be a character. And where you run into problems with that is when you have the character do something that the reader would not, but you are addressing the reader. So you wind up breaking the relationship, you know, like, and then you felt like you were really angry. I'm like, no, actually, I think this is fine. I'm not mad at all. Or, and then you went down the long, dark stairs. I'm like, no, I did not go down the long, dark stairs. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 100% no. So I think it is, it's one of the challenges of how can you make the reader into a character when you're doing that kind of second person, mm-hmm. without making them the actions cause an artificiality.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because this is what led to the silent video game protagonist for so long, right? Mm-hmm. Was they wanted to make sure that they weren't taking the player out of the experience of being the character. So if the character spoke for you, you know, and so this is why, you know, famously Master Chief didn't talk for so long. This is why, you know, Gordon from Half-Life doesn't talk, right? Like, and then over time that's evolved as people develop a little bit more sophistication around being able to participate in the story, even though you're being told that this is what's happening to me. But it can be a really tough balance when it comes to prose, right? Because there's an interesting thing where I see second person deployed a lot, and it's deployed very sparingly in fiction. This is not a common technique, and certainly not a common technique to tell your whole story in. But the ones where I find it really interesting is I noticed a wave of fiction at one point that was all being told from marginalized perspectives, that was all using the second person in really challenging ways. Mm. And it was a little bit of grabbing the reader and saying, you don't get to look away from this right now, right? And I think part of why Fifth Season works really well is it's doing that to some extent. The second person in that is a little bit of, no, you're part of this. You don't get to walk away. You don't get to say, oh, that happened to those people over there, because of the way the second person creates that immediacy, even though you're like, I didn't do those things. You know what I mean? And there's something really interesting about disrupting that layer between the reader and the narrative.
I think one of the things that's going through my head when you're talking about that is, Fifth Season starts with a little bit of a frame. Yeah. It's not there very long, where it is, you know, let's talk about where we are. It is omniscient voice. It is plural we, and then plural we, as opposed to singular we, which is
royal.
Thank you. I was like, who knows what's happening in my brain right there. But then it narrows into it immediately. Pretty much goes into, you are doing this, and it is that, imagine how you would feel if you were here, mm-hmm. for the reader, and then you just stop noticing at a certain point that it is in second person. I read years and years ago, when Shimmer Magazine was still going, we accepted a story that was second person, because I was like 3 pages into it before I realized it was second person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was about someone coming home for Halloween. But it starts with a little bit of this very voice-driven opening, and then it drops into second person. You know, you get home and you can smell all of these things, but it's starting with common experiences, things that it's easy to relate to kind of lead you into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a couple of thoughts. One is the thing about the marginalized folks using second person. It's funny because I see it. I love what you said about it. And yet I was like, oh, I saw it a completely different way, which was that sometimes the experience of being marginalized can be that someone else gets to decide who you are, mm-hmm. what you are doing, and how you are perceived. Mm. And I always viewed it as like a way to force the reader into that same feeling of the lack of control. Mm-hmm. Like, you actually don't get to control even what you are doing in this story. Yeah. And so therefore you should feel what this character feels, or what I, the author, feel, yeah. when I don't feel a control of my own.
No, that's what I was trying to say. So we're...
Oh, there you go. Yeah. But you also said another awesome thing, which was that it's also about, you can't look away.
Right.
And
right,
so
right.
sometimes, yeah. I think it's, you're participating, you're feeling marginalization. Sometimes it could be like you're feeling the, you know, the horrible thing you did.
Yeah.
I think of, I'm going to take liberties with this because we do it with Star Wars all the time, but there is a great episode of Star Trek Voyager where a whole bunch of people participate, feel that they are participating in a massacre. And it turns out that that is actually the memorial to that massacre, grabs you and puts you in the place of the soldier that panics and kills a whole bunch of people. And that's the way that they try to ensure that it never happens again. Because if you feel like you did it, you have to live with the guilt, and that hopefully that stops you from doing further atrocities, which is a really interesting, like, mm-hmm. putting you in the mind of it. And I had something else to say, but I have completely forgotten. And so you, listener, are going to wait while we take a short break. All right. So more second person. So I was thinking about right before we actually started this episode, I was asking everyone, like, have you written, you know, second person? And one thing that came up again and again was game writing. So I'm kind of curious, from those who have written games or played games, do you feel like it works? You sort of mentioned this earlier, Dongwon, like, you feel like it works better in games than in prose. Mm-hmm. And what do you think is the difference there?
I mean, it's funny because of the people here, my primary creative output is in games. So most of the writing I do sort of is second person because, you know, just as a GM sort of live feeding back to my players what just happened, I will say, you did this thing, you said this, you know, there will be a lot of like, I'm telling you what it is that you just did based on the roles that you made and what you've given me and the narration that you've set up. So there's always this really interesting, delicate balance between honoring their intent and making it fit with the story that we're all telling together, right? So like the use of the second person, because you're taking control of someone else's experience, does require you to think about their experience in a really different way than mm-hmm. I think just straight up narration does. I really love that dance. And, you know, obviously I'm doing that dance kind of live with the player in the moment. You know, there's a improvisational immediate feedback aspect to it. But I think it is the reason I love second person so much. The reason I find it so interesting to talk about and so exciting for all things we're talking about is because you cannot escape thinking about the audience and you cannot escape thinking about the writer. And they are in direct relationship when you're using you.
I was playing a role-playing game in which one of the characters decided to introduce themselves in second person by telling all of us how we were reacting to them walking into the room. And to the last player, we rejected that because it didn't fit. Yeah. Because we were being told a thing that was not true.
Yeah.
And we actually had to stop the session and said, okay, yeah. No, the other players have as much choice over what they do as you do. If you want to tell us what we're feeling, we get to have contested die rolls. But when writing game fiction, you're not telling the player necessarily what they're experiencing. You are like, it's like you're giving them instruction. And when I wrote technical manuals, we would slide into second person all the time. But then we'd have editors tell us, hey, you know what? It's starting to feel a little too personal. Let's slide back out into the third person. And so for me, what I've arrived at over the years is that the single biggest problem with second person, and I don't want to say that it's problematic, but the biggest risk is that your audience may bounce off of it in a way that you can't recover from. And that makes it really difficult to use.
One of the reasons that I think second person works so well for game writing specifically is I'm going to tweak Howard's wording slightly. With second person, you often are telling people what they're experiencing. You're just not governing how they experience it when you're in a game
yes.
situation.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, I walk into the room and you see this and you see this and you smell this. And, you know, I hope smell is not the primary sense that you experience when I walk into a room, but
or when you listen to a podcast.
Yeah. But then the players get to decide how they react to that information.
Yeah. It's about agency.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest like things that you'll find if you end up like writing for tabletop games, when you write read aloud text that the GM is meant to read, is that people often say, only use senses, don't use emotions. Like you cannot say you are frightened by the giant monster. You can just say like the monster has 8,000 teeth and like, you know, each one is razor sharp, which, you know, but if somebody's like, that just is, I love that. I want to
bet it. Happy.
Exactly.
I'm a dentist.
Let's hug it.
That presents a career opportunity.
Yeah. Then that's something that like is sort of allowed to happen. And I think what you're saying about agency, it's like agency and buy-in. Like I think a lot of what we're talking about is like that you, when you're using second person, you have to get much more explicit buy-in or think about how you are going to get buy-in. And I'm curious, like, what you think are ways that people can get buy-in to second person? Like, is it by setting the frame, Mary Robin, as you were saying? Is it something else?
Just buy-in made me, a couple of things click in my head. There's a thing in when you're writing for film, television, and what we do, science fiction, fantasy, that you get one or two buy-ins for free. You know, people can live under the water and have fishtails. We buy in. Witches can steal your voice. We buy in. Storms rise out of nowhere. Like, the more you ask them to buy in to things that are off from their experience, the harder it is to sell. Mm-hmm. And I think that may be also, I wonder if that also plays out in second person, that you can do one or two, like, I'm going to have you do this thing that you would not do. And you'll give me one or two of them for the sake of the story. But the more I do, the more disconnected you feel from the story, the more often I take your agency away, the more often I tell you how you are reacting.
There's a world building trick that I've come to refer to as the trust fall. Trust fall is a, you know, group exercise where you build trust, quote unquote, by, you know, catching someone who's falling. As a writer, the trust fall is the simple and easy, I'm going to tell you a thing that you already know to be true, and I'm going to state it as truth so that you trust me to be a writer who tells you things that are true. And by doing that, you build trust. I mean, you shouldn't trust me as a writer because I'm a liar who's going to lie a lot. But by building that trust early on, you can purchase for yourself maybe a little extra buy-in for when you need it.
It looks like you were going to say something before, Dong Wan, but...
If I was, I have forgotten it. I'm sorry.
And that's an example of using second person to try to force someone to do a thing that they don't want to do.
Your face says that you want to talk, but your heart says...
You know something else that... Oh, you do have it
I
now.
I do have something now.
Fantastic.
One of the things I really love about second person while we're on this sort of like how to get this buy-in component is the way second person allows you to use voice in a really different way than other forms. Because it's a direct address, because somebody is speaking to somebody, even if it's an unnamed narrator, it demands a more consistency of voice than you would get in third-person omniscient, for example, where you can slide around from different thing to different thing. Because now that I'm talking to you, somebody is talking to somebody, somebody is writing to somebody. And so there's a difference in, it forces the narration into a character in your story in a really different way as well, right? There is a storyteller. If there is a you, then there is an I. And so I think it allows certain things. That's why one of my favorite things to see in stories is when the narrator suddenly revealed to be a character and I am suddenly revealed to be an audience to that character's speech or someone in the story, right? Which is, you know, as we talked about with Fifth Season, as we've seen in other things, the sudden reveal of what I thought was just narration is actually a character is a thing that I always find truly delightful and exciting.
You reminded me of one of my favorite books, which is The Sun, the Moon, and the Stars by Stephen Bruce. And it's two stories that appear to be completely unrelated. It's third person. But at the end of each chapter, he says, "Bones?" question mark. That's the last thing. And it takes a while before you, deep into the book, the narrator says that... it's first person, actually, I take that back. It's first person before the narrator says that they always tell this Hungarian folktale to their friends, and they end each section the way their mother did, which was by saying bones, which was an indicator to say, do you want me to keep going? And so you suddenly realize that you have been active participant in ways that you didn't realize you were an active participant. And it's like, yes, no, please.
You were
please.
Asking me if I wanted to turn the page.
Yeah.
And I turned the page. So I guess I said yes.
Yeah. So it is very interesting thing to play with.
I guess this all leads me to one question as we're talking about this. You know, we've talked about game writing. We've talked around, you know, like direct address and epistolary. Is second person always metatextual? Does it necessarily require a metatextual relationship to the text? And is that why it is so difficult to use well?
At risk of being slightly prognosticative, I think that will depend entirely on whether we see a massive market-busting breakout work in second person, because if that happens, it'll shift the marketplace. And we may, 25 years from now, look at second person as the new normal.
I mean, we did see a massive market-busting thing, which was the fifth season. Mm-hmm. I did just finish another book where realized at the end of the book that the entire thing had also been doing this. And I'm not going to tell you which book it was because there's a reveal, but it is the metatextual thing again.
And a ton of lit RPG is second person, right? Like there's entire genres of sort of fiction that's using second person as their default voice at this point.
You know what is also second person? Recipes. Recipes are often second person. They don't always put the pronoun on the page, but it is, you know.
Except for the recipe blogs that are third person and begin with a long essay about.
It's very unsettling when they say Howard Taylor mixes the flour into
between bouts of leaf peeping.
Even when you get the big recipe blog section, the recipe itself is very second person, where it's saying, do this, now do this, now add this.
Well, and they're often doing direct address during that. I want to actually, I hear some disdain for the essay at the top. And I just want to say you are not the audience. That does not mean that it is bad. It is there to provide context.
No, I'm,
yes.
I recognize that I'm not the audience.
But that essay, for those of us who read them, are often in a second person. It's like, let me tell you about this. And it's, I guess those are still first person, but it is that direct address to the reader. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's, you were asking me about this. I'm like, I'm not. This is my first time I've been here, but I can see that you are excited about it.
Part of what they're doing is building trust. Mm-hmm. They're telling you a story about how the food affected them. And if you want to have this effect, you will now do this. And it drops into the instruction set.
Interestingly, I think I was like, why do I dislike these things? And I think one of the reasons is that because of the demographics of who does recipe blogs, it often feels like an experience I am very distanced from. Like, I don't do leaf peeping. And so, like, it just feels, you know what I mean? Like, it often is very, like, suburban, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, I was like, I feel like if I wrote a recipe blog and someone was like, I thought of this on the subway or something that felt more to my experience, like, I'm not buying in because I'm like, this is not the kind of experience I would be having. And so I can't relate to it. And so it sort of comes back to what we're saying. And it's just about that I'm not the audience for that particular use of second person.
Late into this episode, my brain finally connected two dots, which is in the same way that I was talking about how one of the dominant languages of our modern world is this third person close because of video games and film. One of the dominant languages of our world is second person because of influencer videos. TikTok, Instagram Reels, YouTube, those are all second person address. Those are all person talking straight into camera to me and me feeling that relationship and that connection. And so when that gets fulfilling and when that gets disruptive, I think is really, really cue to all those social context clues.
Oh, I see Dan has something, but I just want to clarify that I think that those are first person, but often, but the point of view shots that we get in influencer videos where you never see the person, what you just see is their hand chopping something. Mm-hmm. Or the, let me walk you down this trail with my dog, and you never see the person who's doing the walking. So it's like you are having that experience. I don't know. Video is a totally different medium. What were you going to say, Dan?
I was just going to expand the kind of the internet communication beyond just influencer videos, because a lot of it, for example, with the recipe blogs, a lot of that is framed as a you've been asking for this because it is in conversation with their comment section. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we get that a lot in the internet. You've been talking about this. I've been saying this. Your response was this. And it's much more conversational, which to a point does have a lot of second person in it.
And also has a lot of that metatextual thing that you're talking about, which is an awareness of the story and the frame.
And I think that, one of the things that's interesting, I just thought of VR as you were talking about this. VR is interesting because in VR, you, like, it's all you. Like, you can, you know, you're doing things, you're moving in a certain way. It is the most embodied you. I think you can almost be other than maybe immersive theater. where like you're in the center of something and everything is happening around you and you get to have control. And it comes back to agency, which is, I think, the more agency we feel we have in the you, the more comfortable that you feels, the quicker we're able to buy in. So when you're using it as a tool, either you can have a more, you have less agency as the you, and therefore I'm going to put the work in to make you buy in by starting with a frame or making sure that you understand that there's another character or something that like helps you to get in there, or I'm going to give you maximum agency, in which case you do feel like you can control what you're doing.
There was that short story a few months ago that was the riff on Omelas that used internet language and deprived us of agency by using the second person through that as making it clear that we are all complicit in the walking away from Omelas, right? Like, and I think, or the not walking away from Omelas, but all complicit in the exploitation inherent in that story. And that was such a devastating story to read because it uses second person to disrupt my sense of agency and force a sense of complicity. And I'm blanking on the name of the story and the author, but it's wonderful. You should look it up. It's very upsetting.
We'll put it in the show notes and we will send you off now with some homework. So what I'd like you to do is to actually write something in second person. You can decide, you know, whatever you want it to be. You can take a scene that you already have. You can write a recipe blog in second person if you want. Write a bit of a TTRPG read aloud. But what I want you to do is to try it in a couple of different ways. So I want you to think of something that you're getting across in the scene and try it as a you that's directed to another character or a you that's a letter. And then try it again where the you is the actual reader themselves, the person who's experiencing the text, and look at how that shifts things and what that gives you an opportunity to do.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.